The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Ready for Podcast Beyond 316? Give me a hell yeah!
Hell yeah!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 316. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the Texas Rattlesnake, Justin Davis.
Beyond.
The Stone Cold Stunner, Vincent Genito.
Beyond.
And nobody else. Damon Hatfield might join us. Colin's too busy. Goldfarb's got too much work. They missed a hell of an episode. It's Podcast Beyond 316. And so we gotta be like Stone Cold.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah!
Got some Kings of Beers here, the Budweiser, Beechwood aged.
What time is it?
It is way too early for this crack.
Oh, God. I cannot believe.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's 11:30 and we are cracking beers open.
I can't believe you're allowing me to be peer pressured into
this is how Stone Cold would want it. I almost took a photo and credited his bad decision-making skills and our bad decision-making.
Guys, video games are happening right now.
But a lot of people ask, you know, how are we going to celebrate, you know, Podcast Beyond 316? Colin, of course, made a big deal out of Podcast Beyond 311 coming up because 311 is his favorite band.
Right.
And then did jack shit for it. Greg Miller, Podcast Beyond 316 comes around, you better believe we'll be saluting the Texas Rattlesnake, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
At least
born
you...
December 18th, 1964, in Victoria, Texas, Stone Cold Steve Austin would go on to become six-time WWE champion. He was inducted to the Hall of Fame in 2009. He does not think there's a heaven or hell. I thought that was interesting. Since he goes back on the agnostic, and Vince McMahon declared that he's the most profitable wrestler in the WWE's history.
I also don't believe in heaven and hell. I didn't know that I had anything in common with Stone Cold.
Yeah,
we all have something in common with Stone Cold.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's the everyman. Yeah. He's the everyman of the WWE.
Did you know that I have the entire inscription on the Budweiser bottle memorized?
I did, but I'd like to see you do it right now because you're going to do it.
No.
You didn't think this is how it's going to go? I'm turning them all away.
No, but are you going to
also cursive?
Are you going to read one to verify that it's sideways?
If you want to play at home, ladies and gentlemen, we're drinking Budweiser out of the can. The
king, the king of beers.
Now I'm on the spot. It's been years since I've done this. Okay. This is the world-famous Budweiser beer. We know of no other beer brewed by any other brewer that has our...
You're close, all right.
Okay,
I'll give you a hint. Which costs
more to brew and age. Our exclusive Beechwood aging produces a taste, a smoothness, and a drinkability you will find in no other beer at any price.
Whoa! Last sentence you nailed.
Nailed
outside
it.
Outside of that,
like
a
word
few
for word.
Word here right. is in there. But it's good enough, man. It's good. Yeah, cheers, huh?
Yeah.
Hey.
Saluti booty.
If I was like Stone Cold, I was thinking about it today. Maybe I wanted to drink like Stone Cold where you do the two and you pour them all over yourself, really. But like that's a messy thing.
Or the four when he's really into it, when he's really...
When he's won a world title or something.
When he wants to really drive up the stock prices of Budweiser.
Yeah. This takes me back to my college days.
Drinking some Buds?
This is what I... Well, I mean, this is specifically what I drank.
You podcast really? And drink Budweiser?
No. But you drink Bud like normally?
Yeah, but... Well, no, I don't.
Like, I still stand by that Budweiser out of the can is my favorite beer of all time.
Okay,
and I'm a beer snob. All right, I love
guys,
beers.
It's been a great podcast. I'll see you guys later.
You
Bye.
Can't have an opinion?
No, Budweiser was my beer of choice at that point.
See, that was too high class for us. We were drinking...
It was a good run for Beyond, Greg.
In college, if you were trying... Oh, please. If the Mr. T episode didn't kill us, this is not going to kill us. In my college days, if you were high classing up and you're having like a party with some girls, you'd have Bud Light.
Right.
Otherwise, it was Natty Light, but all the other times it was a 30 pack of Snowens, Keystone Light. Ooh. Come in, crack those boys open, play some caps, get wild out there.
You are talking about things I have literally no idea about.
I'm gonna bring a pack of Snowens, and you and I are gonna play caps one day, Vince. And it is going to be disgusting.
I don't know what caps are.
It's the greatest drinking game of all time.
Vince, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a small suburb called Nyack in Rockland County in New York.
Okay, that explains a lot.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so my high school, I went to Rockland Country Day School in Congers, and my entire high school was 50 people.
Mm.
Then I went to Manhattanville College in Purchase, New York. My whole college was like, at the time, maybe 2,000, 3,000 people, and no Greek life. So you're literally blowing my mind right now, Greg Miller.
Yeah. This is why Greg and I get along so well. We're both from the Midwest.
Right.
We got those Midwest values.
Yeah.
and you just – there's nothing – what people don't understand about the Midwest is there is nothing to do there.
True.
So all the girls just get pregnant.
Yep.
And then –
you get married super early. Then you have a baby. And nowadays you have your divorce. And then
you have – by your 20 – if you don't have like two kids by the time you're 24, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm not – like this is my – this is where I come from.
Sure.
So I'm not, this isn't a value judgment.
No, I'm just saying.
And anyway, the point is on the weekend, since there's literally nothing to do, you have a bonfire and you have beer.
Yeah.
That's your life.
College was a lot of drinking. Midwest is a lot of drinking.
Yeah.
I didn't do a lot of drinking until – honestly, I was like 22 before I really started
drinking
on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, when I was 21, I was like, oh, woo, I'm 21. I don't know. I'm a total square. Like, people don't know this about me. Like,
I'm, I think
– Wait, you think – No, please. Please, go on. Like, dude, does everyone know I'm a square? Am I like
– I think we're all openly pretty much squares to work here at IGN. We're all those video game nerdy square guys. Vince,
yes.
You've given the listeners here a bit about yourself.
Yeah.
This is your Podcast Beyond debut.
It is. It's my coming out.
Exactly. However.
Nope.
The more important thing is that Podcast Beyond itself is what led you to working at IGN. You are now an associate editor here.
That's correct.
Give everybody the nutshell story of how it happened.
Okay. So should I go like back to the beginning or the beginning, like when I'm in New York on the couch? I've told you this.
Sure. Do that.
Okay. Cool.
Anything that makes Podcast Beyond look really good.
Sure. Awesome. Well, I don't know. So the easiest way to start this, it's, you know, not to be a downer, but yeah, a couple years ago, I got divorced and lost my job.
Tried to kill myself.
I tried to kill it. It was terrible. No, I wasn't.
Tried to drink it away with overpriced beers that weren't as good as Budweiser.
I was drowning my sorrows in whatever video footage I could find of Marvel vs. Capcom 3 at the time.
Yes, yes.
And yeah, and I read Greg's really awesome piece about not doing the infamous 2 review because he was too emotionally attached to the franchise because it kind of helped him through his divorce.
That's great.
And that was the first time I said, wow, like I have to make this freedom that I've gained from all the things that I've lost count for something. So I threw all my stuff in the back of my Jeep and I drove out here to San Francisco from New York without any leads, without any friends, without any contacts, nothing. And I was here. What you were gonna say, Justin?
Oh, I mean, I don't mean to interrupt, but
no, please.
No, I'll. I have a question to ask you, but I'll wait till you're at that point.
Okay,
story.
Cool.
Please
save
all questions till the end of the presentation. The PowerPoint will end, and then you may ask.
Yeah, and then strangely, for whatever reason, I hadn't been following Greg on Twitter. I was following a couple of the other editors, but I hadn't been. And then when I got to San Francisco, I was like, yeah, you know what? Let me just add him to my Twitter feed. And not 5 minutes after I added him to my Twitter feed, he was tweeting out about Beyond 200. And I was like, oh, wow, Beyond 200. And there was this party and, you know, people weren't allowed in unless you were on the list. And I was like, well, I'm going to put myself on the list. So I just drove on down and I had to park like almost a mile away from IGN because it was a Giants game that night. So parking was a light up. Mm-hmm. I walked like a mile. I'm huffing and puffing. I'm a big guy, people. Like, if you haven't seen me, I'm like, I'm not in good shape at all. And I get to the door and they let me in. I'm talking to security and I'm like, yeah, I talked to Greg. I totally didn't talk to Greg. I'm like, yeah, I talked to Greg. I got a blog. Here's my card. I'm supposed to be here. And I sweet talked my way in. And then that's how I met, Greg for the first time. And
yeah,
then
I did at the after party when we were all drunk and you came up to me like, I wasn't even supposed to be here.
Exactly.
who the fuck are you?
Like, I was so going in. Like, I put a table together and like I ordered a bunch of like appetizers that I had no intention of eating just in the hopes that, you know, IGN people would come and sit down and eat, and eventually,
and
you know,
worked.
Of course you put out chicken wings and guess what? You get a wild
like
a wild
trap.
A wild Greg Miller appears. and he sat down and we talked and then he brought me in for a tour and the rest is history.
Hey, are those them chicken wings?
It's crazy that it happened. We met at Podcast Beyond 200.
Yeah.
You started doing freelance stuff for
it's
us.
It's a very similar story to Andrew Goldfarb, by the way.
Right, yeah.
Oh, really, really? Yeah. I wasn't aware of that.
And then right after Podcast Beyond 300, 100 episodes later,
yep.
You actually like started working.
That's right. And I remember when 300 came around and Colin had approached me and he was like, hey, you know, some of us are going out for dinner to celebrate 300. We'd love it if you'd come. And I just couldn't make it because I had travel plans. I can't remember where it was that I was heading, but I was flying out. So I wasn't going to be able to make it, but I just remember thinking to myself, man, like
Beyond 200, like, I had stars in my eyes, and these people were all celebrities to me.
Yeah. So who was it?
And now we've all fallen to earth.
Yeah. Who was it that attended Beyond 300 that's going to be working here at Beyond 400?
Ooh.
Jimmy Champagne.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's the exact name I was going
to
drop.
He is freaking out right now. Or he stopped listening to the show episodes ago when he lost the PlayStation 4.
Vince, my question for you was going to be, do you remember when Greg and I were at this Konami event and you were there? And I think, I mean, I was kind of drunk. I don't know if you were kind of drunk.
Uh-huh.
And I remember you saying, oh, it's just my dream to work at IGN. And
I'm like, that's the impression. I hope he was drunk.
I don't remember sounding like that,
well,
but
like,
okay.
So I can't judge like I was drunk, so that's my memory of it. And I didn't know who you were.
Right, right. We didn't really know each other.
And so I was just like, right on, man.
Like, any dreams come true, bro.
No, like, I do remember that, because at the time when I was freelancing, even when I was freelancing, I still felt like I was on the outside looking in. So anytime I ran into an IGN person at an event where I was freelancing maybe for another outlet, because I was freelancing for Total PlayStation, I was freelancing for Game Revolution. So anytime I ran into an IGN person at an event, I was always like, oh my God, I hope they like me so I can work there one day. So yeah, absolutely.
It made me feel like I've been doing this 10 years now. And you know, Greg, you've been doing it a long time. And we were at this Konami event, and like, they're announcing things. It's exciting. It's
you and I were so jaded and ready to go home. Well, like, I'm fucking tired.
The only thing I'm thinking about is that it's a weeknight.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh. And everyone's like, it's an open bar. Let's get drinks. I'm just like, I want to go. Like, I want to go. And it's nothing against Konami. Like, I like Metal Gear Solid.
It's just one of those traditional video game
and
PR
so,
events.
As it goes, it was a good event.
And then I ran into you, and then you're just like, you're more excited than anyone I've ever met. And I'm just like, And I did. I think I left. I think I cabbed it home.
Yeah, we weren't there to cover anything. We were there to like see games and like just see what was up. We weren't generating anything from it. We were there to press flesh, as they say.
Right, and also
the problem is that Konami event, as great as it is the same footprint it's been for 5 years. So, like, I know what I'm getting into before I come in.
Right,
the door.
Right. And this is what, like, I don't know. Like, I've been doing this so long that like it's an open bar. You're playing games before they come out.
You're with your best friends.
You're with your really good friends. You're in like one of the more cool clubs in San Francisco, and yet I'm still like not happy to be there.
It's one of those things we always get so mad, right? We're just like, bring the game to our desk, bring it to our office so we can get, because like now it's all direct feed and all this jazz, and it's all important to have that.
And it's like, I get accused of being a negative person sometimes.
No.
And then I don't see it. Like, I don't feel...
I don't see it. To be honest, knowing you only about a month and a half, like, working with you, I don't see it either.
Thank you very much. Like, I don't see it in myself, but then I think about how I was so unhappy to be at that event, despite the four incredible facts that I just laid out. I'm like, yeah, all right.
Well, let me ask a question about that, Justin. Like,
yeah, you're about 6 months away from feeling like us.
No, I understand that. Okay. I understand that stance, and you're definitely not the first people to say, like, oh, don't worry, like, you know, the industry will beat it out of you eventually.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to.
You want to have some real talk?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to for me. And the reason I want to ask you, Justin, if I can, like,
you can.
What did you do before this job? Before you got into writing about games and before you got into the game industry, what were you doing?
This is all I've ever done.
Okay, it's all you've ever done.
So wrote about games for fun in high school.
Right.
And then I got a part-time job writing about games in college. Uh-huh. I got $1,000 a month just flat just to write news for like Game Daily Biz. I wrote trade news.
Nice.
And then I left college. I quit school when I got offered a full-time job writing about games. I got to run a small mobile games website called Modojo.com, M-O-D-O-J-O. Okay. And I ran that site, and it was me and a team of volunteer writers. I was the only person on staff that was getting paid. And like, the site didn't make any money, but it also didn't cost any money. Like, it paid my salary, and that was enough to like – We ran that business as like a lifestyle business. We're like, we're not going to get rich doing it, but it lets us do what we want to do with our lives.
That answers the question perfectly. Like,
I've never done anything else.
And that's exactly kind of my point. So now I'm 35. I just turned 35 on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And until I got this job, this last month and a half that I've been doing this job was the first time ever that I've had a job that did not involve service.
You're going to make me cry.
Since I was 16, I took a job washing dishes. I worked hard at that and became a waiter. And to me, that was a big step up in the world.
Yeah.
And then after that, I begged and begged and begged at my local EB Games to, you know, actually, it wasn't even EB Games. It was Electronics Boutique back then.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I begged and begged and begged. I remember they had – I was in there and the manager asked one of the employees to clean a counter. And he was kind of lollygagging about it and wouldn't do it. I scraped out all the money in my pocket to go next door to the CVS and buy surface cleaner and paper towels. And I came in and did it for him.
That's a little weird.
And she was like, okay, we get it. We have to give you a job.
Yeah,
that's cool. And that's how I got that. That's how I got that job.
That's very similar to your IGN story.
Yeah, exactly. This is a trend in my life. Then
I stuck into the GameStop part.
I hustled from there and became management eventually with EB Games until they went public and changed hands to GameStop, and I wasn't happy with the way they were treating their customers and some of the things that were going on. So I left that job and leveraged that management experience into working at Enterprise, and I worked my up there. But at every step of the way, my job has been a professional punching bag. I've literally been working with the public every day, getting kind of wailed on by people professionally. Like I was getting paid money to be a test dummy and get beat up on.
Yeah. So when I was in high school, I worked at A&W, and I didn't understand
the root beer place.
Fast food place.
Okay.
They do root beer floats. That's a big thing. And when I
oh, beautiful.
That's the bottom line.
When I first started, I'm like, I don't want to work in the kitchen. That's so much work. I want to work in the front dealing with the customers. And I figured out real quick that you don't want to work in a job dealing with customers if you can avoid it.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to complain or like make it like – but even my father, who is a self – my father, I think, has been working in some way or another since he was 12. You know, he was helping put food on the table and, you know, pay bills in his situation. He's a self-made man, a businessman. You know, he owns his own business, has been his own employer for decades and decades. He's got hustle out the wazoo.
Right.
My dad came with me one day to watch me at EB because, he was there for whatever reason. And after watching me deal with two customers, my dad, who like doesn't complain about anything, doesn't bellyache about anything, never came home from work. Hey, Dad, how was your day? It was work. He's never complained about anything in his life. He was like, I don't know how you do this. So that's how people who have never done service feel about service after they see it for like 5 seconds. I did it for 20 years. So doing service for 20 years and being paid to be a basically a punching bag, and then coming to this,
I'm never gonna get to the point where this is too much. And I still stand by it, right? Like coming from being newspaper journalism or reporting or whatever, like every day here is still a vacation. And like, you know, 20 minutes ago, I was ready to burn this room down because this room's cursed and something always goes wrong in the podcast room. And Goldfarb and Colin couldn't do the show today. And it's like, you're running around scrambling and you just want to fucking kill everything. But when the show gets going, it's great. You know what I mean? And like, what we're talking about the event, I believe I was still going through chemo too.
So you were. I was going to point that out. You were in the throes of your cancer battle.
Yeah. I didn't have any of that excuse. cancer.
I mean, like, it's just a different thing of like what your focus is when you go to the events, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We had nothing to gain, I think, that day.
Right.
It's still one of those deals where people are like, it's an open bar and it's all this stuff. How can you complain? And I'm like, yeah, but that still means you're working from 7 a.m. until 9 p.m.
The events I go to and I drink and party at now are more common since I'm just a host or whatever. But when I was actually writing, never. That was actually like a deterrent to like – that got in the way of actually previewing games, right? Yeah.
Exactly, for sure. Vince, I'm glad you're here. An inspirational quote that I enjoy is – I don't have the exact quote, but paraphrasing.
You were the worst at this. You were the worst at this.
No!
I've memorized the can. I have a quote. Oh, wait.
It'll still be inspirational. Let him go.
The can. I would say I got that can 90% right.
It'll still be inspirational.
That's an A-minus, Greg.
You were not in the 80s.
Okay.
Inspire me.
The quote is basically, you know, work really, really hard until your idols become your rivals.
And that's exactly – what has happened. Yeah. Like it still bugs me. I was sitting at my desk, you know, 20 minutes ago sending emails, and all of a sudden Greg Miller is sitting next to me. He's like, hey, want to do Podcast Beyond? And I'm like, I can't believe this is my life. Like, I can't believe that 2 years ago this was someone who was a hero to me. And he's still a hero to me. Don't remember, that hasn't changed.
Nah, he knows that. But,
but I can't believe that someone who 2 years ago was just like a name and an idol and an icon, and now it's my coworker and my friend.
I grew up reading EGM. That was my big thing with Dan Shu, Crispin Boyer, and all these guys.
So many of us did.
And they were just like legends to me. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, Dan Shu's still kicking around. We're actually friends now. And that still blows my mind that, you know, he's running VentureBeat Games and all of this stuff, GamesBeat. And I don't know. It's a surreal feeling, Mr. Miller.
I agree, Mr. Davis.
It still seems like a dream to me. Like when I wake up in the morning,
I
still
kiss you right now.
Let's make out, guys. Let's just cut it short and just have a make out session.
Turn the camera off.
No, leave it on. Let's show people it's okay.
Oh my god, wait, we're on camera? No, I seriously just realized that just now.
For the first time ever for the Stone Cold episode, there's going to be a video I put on my personal channel that's just the gibberish in between all the real news stories. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's PlayStation podcast, the number one PlayStation podcast on the internet. Let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. You're supposed to go do 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 do.
I was going
to
do it, but I didn't want to.
Time for some news. It's okay. You're both not.
It's too late. Stop.
Stop making noise. All right, biggest news story of the day. The Walking Dead Season 2 has been revealed, confirmed,
so excited.
Everything.
Woo,
so you big. Are playing as Clementine. That's the big deal.
That is so awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, especially amidst like all the rising talk about, hey, when do we get more female protagonists in our games?
Right.
Bam. Here's Telltale Games with it.
They released a very short teaser. At the very end of it, we see Clementine. She looks a little bit older. She's wearing her hat.
She's still keeping her hair short.
Keep that hair short, girl.
Keep that hair short.
Now, here's my question for you about this, is that we made a lot of advice in our final moments of the Walking Dead game. We're probably going to spoil it, so if you haven't beaten the Walking Dead yet, you're stupid. But you have to say a lot of things there as Lee is dying, right? To say, like, hey, you haven't beaten it? Vince, what the fuck is your problem?
Get out!
It's okay, spoil me.
Clementine will remember that.
Yeah, I know. That's we'll remember that, too. I like we went to a Xbox One preview event last night.
Yeah.
I walked in with Vince. I immediately lost Vince. He walked over to Killer Instinct. I'm like, cool. I came back downstairs 2.5 hours later to leave. He was still at the Killer Instinct booth. I'm like, have you moved from this spot? He goes,
nope.
No.
Nope.
Really?
So he is ready to review Killer Instinct already.
I actually just started The Wolf Among Us last night.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you start Walking Dead?
Oh, yeah. I did all of Chapter 1. That was it.
I loved Wolf Among Us, and that's what gives me hope for Walking Dead Season 2.
What do you mean that gives you hope? What about, oh, because the two people left.
Yeah, I mean, no, sure. There's
Sean
that.
Left. Sean Vanneman's gone.
The writing team has had some turnover, and writing's the whole thing.
Sure.
But the big thing is, I didn't dislike Walking Dead. I wouldn't put it in the bad category, but I was not as wild about it as a lot of people were.
And from Chapter 1, if I'm being honest, neither was I, and that's kind of why I never went on with it. It wasn't that I thought it was bad at all. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely
it's
think
it like,
deserves all the credit it
it's
gets.
It's like damning something with faint praise.
Exactly.
Merely good.
Right.
Because I totally played through the whole thing and enjoyed it. And if there's a game I'm not liking, I'll just stop, right? I played through the whole thing and did like it. But I didn't see all the Game of the Year hype. I didn't see that. I like the characters. I like the pathos, and I like the voice acting.
Right.
Huge technical problems.
Yeah.
Not really much
sure.
in the gameplay department. And even some of the story beats were a little bit strange
sure.
to me. So, but I did still enjoy the game. But what I was trying to say, let me bring this back around.
Bring it
which
around.
Is that Wolf Among Us, I think, is incredible. I absolutely love it. I feel like Telltale has really sort of sorted out the issues with their engine, and they feel much more confident in their ability to that game's just so gorgeous.
Yeah,
and
it's really pretty.
It is really beautiful.
And even the action is really interesting and dynamic in a way that I didn't feel like it was in Walking Dead. And I feel like the writing in Wolf Among Us is, you know, clever and compelling.
I enjoyed Wolf Among Us, but I wasn't into it nearly as much as I'm into Walking Dead.
Okay.
Like, it was just one of those things I didn't –
well,
it's
subject
matter,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bigby, and that's the whole thing. I don't like Fables. I don't read Fables.
So if they can take that level of polish that's in Wolf Among Us and apply that to
you
Walking
Dead –
you
have to imagine they will,
man.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing is that Walking Dead, when it first came around, I remember being like, oh, Telltale's doing Walking Dead? As a huge Walking Dead fan. Are they going to fuck this up? Like, do they know what they're doing?
I'm so glad you actually said that, because what did you think about the way they did Sam & Max on the consoles?
I never got into Sam & Max.
See,
I
like
reviewed Jurassic Park, and I was like, this sucks.
I did not like the way it was handled on consoles.
Oh, I liked them a lot.
I had to review it, and I hated the interface. I hated the whole dot-based interface where there's like 30 dots on the screen, and you have to cycle through them individually with like a – I thought it was terrible. I was like, you've got a mouse and a keyboard.
You're talking about controls, right?
I'm like, you've got a mouse and a keyboard idea on PC that works perfectly fine. I'm like, just make the analog stick behave like a mouse.
Right.
And you've got the perfect interface, but they felt the need to do this crazy like selection scheme that just totally put me off.
Walking Dead, I felt like they were super hit or miss, right? Like
yeah.
Sam Max I didn't connect with, but Back to the Future started, I thought, fantastically and then spiraled into nonsense. ruined, like they were like, this is like canon, this is the third movie. And I'm like,
nope.
If you beat that game, guess what? They broke time.
Ooh, stop!
You are never going to beat
stop.
It.
Stop. I have a problem.
Yeah? Oh, you need another cold one. You want me to throw it to you like they throw it to Stone Cold?
Nope. Yeah.
Coming in.
That was dangerous. We're playing a dangerous game.
We gotta live like Stone Cold today.
So I really feel like Telltale has an opportunity to do something really, really special with Walking Dead. They have an opportunity to do something really special with Clementine, where I don't want to get too hyperbolistic.
Sure. Hyperbolistic, folks. You heard it here.
You heard it here, folks.
But like
that
Clementine
sounds like a marketing term that a video game company would
if use. Episode one, she's a little girl, you guide her, you give her instructions as Lee, you sort of shepherd her and keep her safe. Then episode two, you are her, you play as her, and then hopefully, presumably, fingers crossed, knock on wood, there'll be a season three where Clementine plays a part of that, but maybe now she's in that
the Lee mode.
Yeah, like the Lee role, like Mass Effect is sort of that way, but video games have never really ever done anything like that or even really tried to do anything like that. Like, they have an opportunity to do something really special,
I think. Before we spiraled off into nonsense ourselves, I was talking about the fact that what I think is interesting about playing her is at the end of Walking Dead, we give her specific instructions, whether it's don't trust strangers or go to find a group or yada, yada, yada. And I want to know, they've said, keep your saves. I'm very interested to see how that carries over. Is it going to be that certain options are blocked? Are we going to start in different positions as Clementine based on what we did before?
Yeah, I mean, that's fascinating. You run into a challenge where just a production challenge from Telltale's standpoint, where depending on whether you save Doug or the terrible chick, I save Doug.
Carly.
Okay.
Carly wasn't terrible. She was awesome.
Well, she was suspicious of Lee, right?
Well, she didn't know how you work batteries, but yeah. No, she knew Lee's secret. She was like Lois Lane. She knew.
Oh, sure,
Clark
sure, sure.
Superman didn't say anything.
So, well, I mean, I save Doug, because I like Doug. But
you would.
Anyway, the point is, they have to pay for voice acting and, production work and all this stuff on, something that only half the people are ever going to see.
Well, so do we actually have metrics on who chose who?
Well, yeah, but I mean,
they show them to you.
Sure,
end,
but they have to make two paths for stuff that,
Either way, it's double the resources.
Right. And so I hope that they do some of that stuff, but I'm not expecting too much there in terms of you're either going to find a group, you're going to be on your own, or something radically different.
Well, I think it could just be the thing that they knocked Walking Dead season one about, right, that I always was that all these decisions you make still come back to the same ending. Right. And I kept describing it like a coloring book, right? Like, we each have the same picture, but we shade it differently and we come at it a different way.
See, I don't knock –
No, I know you don't. I'm not saying – I wasn't throwing you under that bus. I'm just saying that – I think they have a little bit different leeway if they're starting fresh, quote-unquote, and they can start from one spot or start from another, or just have it be slightly different.
I just think that's a strange complaint. Like, I absolutely love – I think more than anyone else at IGN, I loved Beyond Two Souls. It's one of my games –
More than Mitch? Oh, wow. The first game of the year.
It's
one
of my games of the year so far. I was absolutely enamored and emotionally involved in it. I cared about the characters. It was incredible to me. And then the complaints on the internet are the choices you make – don't make a difference at the way they do in Heavy Rain. And I'm like, I guess that's true, but the story, it didn't bother me. So what?
That's what drove me away.
What becomes an issue, a point of contention there is, that sound is, oh my God.
We're living the stone cold life, ladies and gentlemen.
It's like the clouds parted and a beam of light shone down from the heavens, and then that happens. No, what I think becomes a problem is, and me and Dan Stapleton were actually talking about this the other day, fucking Dan, is about authorship.
JK,
right?
Dan, I love you.
And about games feeling authored. And, he seems to feel that no matter what, whether you have choice or not, it's authored because you're always playing something that was created by someone for you to experience it. But,
they're still telling you a story.
Right. Sure, sure. And in the way I see it, the more agency the player has, the less authored something can be.
For sure.
Is how I personally feel about it.
I totally agree. I care about Jody. I'm invested in her journey. And it's strange to me that she's in a different place for some people than she is for me. It's strange, some people go through that whole game and then Jody lives her life alone, and then other people play that whole game and Jody lives her life with someone else,
right?
And that's it bothers me because I was so emotionally involved in that story,
right,
that I don't have that closure of I don't know what happened to her. Maybe I can just assume that my ending is what happened to her, but I know other people didn't experience the same thing, and I just want her to be happy.
And that's the interesting thing, right, is that either it's something that gets left up to interpretation, like in a film, a film ends and sometimes the ending doesn't have a neat little bow on it, and that can be interesting.
Does the top fall over in Inception?
I don't know. Right, I don't know, So there's that, but then there's the issue of if you're not – so it's usually either you're not giving a conclusion or you're giving a conclusion. And in games like this, it's either you're giving a – you're giving one of two conclusions.
Right.
You know, and it kind of avoids the whole, like, we want to leave it up to interpretation. The leave it up to interpretation in games is pick A or pick B. But then, like, where's the authorship in that? You know, like, if you're going to leave it up to interpretation, the interesting thing about that is that people can think about it and talk about it and discuss it. Yeah. But if you let people have one choice or the other, then it's kind of like –
it's not interpretive.
It's not just interpretive. Different. It's just different, right.
Yeah, and so that's why I think Walking Dead has an opportunity to – so first of all, I was making a point here, which is –
We've all been just – this is fun. This is a good show.
It's that it doesn't bother me that it all circled back around to the same basic ending, because I'm emotionally connected and involved in these characters, and I don't want – I think it would suck if, like, oh, in your game that character died, in my game they're alive. Then I'm like, well, fuck. Like, I understand that some people want to have a lot of power over the choice of, you know, their story. But for me, like, I want these people to reach, like, a happy end. And if I find out that there was a way for them to have reached that end and now I have that save for season two and, oh, but, you know, this character's dead that's alive in someone else's game. I just feel like that creates negative feelings for me personally.
Sure.
That I, you know, don't want.
Now, if I could play devil's advocate to that for a second,
you may, like, not.
Bye, guys. It was fun.
Womp, womp.
No, but if I can play devil's advocate to that, the thing about that is that – what are you –
No, just
– Can I help you?
Yeah, no, go ahead. Continue.
Okay. Are you done, Mr. Davis?
I'm just making silly faces.
You're doing a good job.
No, but what I was going to say is the pushback on that is – so everyone wants to have – a narrative experience. Mm-hmm. Well, not everyone wants to have one, but the people who like these kinds of games, like Beyond Two Souls and Heavy Rain and Wolf Among Us, they're having an interactive narrative experience. But the debate is always like, well, is this a game or is this an experience? And that's the problem, is that if you don't give people choice, isn't it less of a game? At a certain point, if you take choice away, doesn't it become just a movie that you watch that you have occasional meaningless input into? How do you maintain the sense of it being a game and giving players agency while simultaneously not stifling the sense of authorship?
Well, like, see, for me, how do you solve that problem? That was the big thing. That's the difference between Walking Dead and Beyond for me, is that in Walking Dead, I felt like it was like, oh, it's light on gameplay. You're not really shooting or doing anything. Like, I was like, the gameplay is the choices and the dialogue and interactive intervention.
Is that enough?
For me, it was. But for Beyond, it wasn't. Because Beyond, I wasn't invested, because, like, I always talk about I stopped playing at Navajo because a guy asked Jody, where are you going? And, like, I don't get to choose what she says. I just say the tenor of what she says. So I say truth. And she goes, I don't really know. Just walk it. I'm like, what the fuck am I playing this for then? What is your motivation? What are you doing with your – I don't know. You know, I'm on the run. I'm doing this. I don't know. And, like, the fact that, like, when you're – we're spoiling Beyond now too. Early on when you're in the birthday party and, like, I'm like, truth, truth, truth. And I'm telling this kid and I finally build up to the moment. I'm like, I have this entity and it follows me around and this is what happens. And the boy's like, oh, what? This is my favorite song. Let's dance. I'm like – motherfucker, I just told you a ghost is following my whole life. And you're like, let's dance.
And that's a big problem, because at its very core, at the very core of video games, is action and reaction. That's the core of everything. One of the main things that's powerful about playing a video game is that, okay, so in life, you can do things and it can have no effect. You can work hard and it gets you nowhere. You could say the right things and you don't meet success.
Tell
in a video game, you press jump and that motherfucker jumps every time.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's what's compelling about it. So when you introduce a game that at least seems to be interactive, an interactive experience, but your input doesn't change anything or doesn't have a direct effect, that is counter to every instinct we have as gamers.
Yeah, but you don't know. Like, I don't think that many games do it well, or I'm not sure any games do it well.
But like, how do you do it well? Like, what's the well?
It stresses me out. Games like The Walking Dead and Heavy Rain is a better example that stresses me out, where you're forced to make these choices, and I get that this is more like real life, but you're forced to make these, like, video gamey choices where you don't know the outcome it's going to have. Like, you'll make a choice and then 5 hours later a character dies or something happens and it just doesn't feel as good to me. Like, Beyond Two Souls can be – it goes too far in the other direction. I'm not saying it's perfect either, although I did like it, where you literally – there is no game over screen in that game. She's getting mauled by dogs. Don't touch the controller. Nothing happens. She's fine. Everyone's always fine.
Which is what took it away from me, right, of, like, why I was doing it.
And so I think that's too far in the other direction, but I think Heavy Rain and even Walking Dead to an extent are – they have these video gamey systems where everything has to boil down to systems, but they're not surfaced to the player.
And that's
so
a problem.
You don't really, like, I don't feel like I have control. Like, I'm making these choices, but I don't feel like I have control over them, and I don't know what's going to happen. And then it creates stress for me when I'm playing. Like, I feel stressed playing it because of that.
Right, because 20 years or whatever, however many years you've been playing games, all these years of playing games have conditioned you that when I do something, I know what the reaction is going to be, and I'm pressing things and making choices right. in a very informed fashion. And these forms of games just kind of countermand right. that.
Uninformed choices stress me out.
Yeah, absolutely. In any game, whether it's this kind of game or like an action game, no matter what, like you said, uninformed choices don't feel right to us. In fact, in any other game,
that's life.
It is yeah, life, but it's not
games. Aren't life.
But games aren't life. Exactly. I totally
agree.
There
can be a genre for that, though.
Sure.
I agree. To be really clear, I'm not at all shitting on this idea of interactive.
You hate choice. Get out of here. Yeah.
And I'm also and I want to chime in and say the same thing right. where I still really enjoyed Walking Dead and I actually really liked Heavy Rain, but these are just a couple things that did bother me about them.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of how do we solve this problem of making an interactive cinematic experience, which I believe is an entirely valid genre
yeah.
and an entirely valid way of making a game. It's really tough to solve and iron out all the problems of how do we make it interactive and how do we make the player – how do we follow at least enough of the conventions of what video games have conditioned us to feel good about without stifling the ability to tell an interesting story that's yeah. authored.
I mean, I do believe – I'm confident in Telltale's ability to get this done.
I like, think so. I absolutely do.
I do believe that The Walking Dead, despite the criticisms I had of the original, I do believe it's something special, and I believe that season 2 has an opportunity to be incredible.
If the lessons they've clearly learned that they applied so far from what I've seen of Wolf Among Us, if all that learning went into
yeah.
season 2 of Walking Dead, it's going to be gangbusters.
That was my big thing. You know, I reviewed The Walking Dead and all that stuff, and I gave it whatever I gave it. Overall, like a 9-something. Or, yeah, but I loved it. You know, obviously. Uh-huh. And when it came to Game of the Year, and people would be like, I'm voting for, you know, Walking Dead. Like, what about you, Greg? I'd be like, nope. Like, I mean, like,
yeah.
Game of the Year is an honor you give to something, and you can look back and say, this was the best game that year. And, like, the way it would chug or eat saves or have the freaking climbing tool embedded in a wall
right.
before you came out of the manhole. You're like, what is going on? You yeah. know what I mean? Like,
so the more, you know, emotionally resonant that they try to make these games, that, you know, developers are able to make these games, not just try, but succeed at making games, the more the strange video gamey stuff stands out.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have a topic that we're planning on heading towards next, but what you just talked about was interesting to me.
We're a conversational podcast, man. So you might not know that.
Okay, no,
you're welcome to take it wherever you want. I'll let you know that we are 35 minutes into the podcast, and we are only on item one of the Roper Report. So
oh.
I just want you guys to know that means I love you.
Okay,
I love these kind of shows. So what do you got? What do you got for me?
So let me throw it out, and we can either bury it away for later or not. But you just said you gave The Walking Dead an excellent review. What'd you say the number was?
9-something or other.
9-something.
Overall.
Okay. It was definitely probably, in terms of numbers, one of the highest rated games, you know, on
yeah,
IGN.
Certainly.
In that year. So. But yet, when it came up for Game of the Year talk, you were like, "Nope, absolutely not." Even though
right.
I gave it a great review. So, what's interesting, and like you know, we haven't started really improper talking about Game of the Year this year.
That's not true.
Well, you know, we've had some behind the scenes talks a little bit. We haven't had any official roundtables or anything yet.
Every quarter this year, we've been doing a Game of the Year watch where the best
which is
games
Damon
are...
and I though fucking around.
Right,
like, it's not an official. Like it's a good heads up of a barometer.
Sure,
of what's
sure.
happening
so,
in the office.
But what I want to say is though, so Grand Theft Auto V, we
yeah.
gave a 10. I don't know if I feel like anyone in the office is going to raise their hand and say
people
that's
will.
My game of the year.
People will, but I don't
lots
think it'll
of
win.
Will.
Yeah, I don't think
you
it'll
think
win,
so?
But I think a lot of people vote
and
for
that's
it.
Interesting to me because it's not always a – I think it's interesting that you can give a high numerical score to something, acknowledge that it has a very high level of quality, and that it's in some way – especially a 10 means it's an important achievement in some way,
yeah,
shape, or form.
Yeah.
But somehow that can still – that still might not necessarily net you or lock you in for
sure.
Game of the Year because what we recognize as Game of the Year is not about just what has the highest level of quality or what's the biggest achievement. There's so many other things that go into
I mean,
what makes it the best
we
experience
struggle with
of the
this
year.
Still as an industry, right? But
yeah.
video games are art, which
yeah.
means everybody brings a different interpretation to it.
Right.
So when you're getting ready to talk about the highest honor of the year, you have to step back and say, what does that mean to you? And then you cast your ballot based on that, right? It's not people are always like that. Like when we do the top 25 PS3 list, right? Like,
uh-huh.
oh my god, why is this here and this here? This had a better score. And this
right.
is always, oh, I can't believe IGN gave Imagine Babies an 8.5, but whatever. Like, Mario Kart a 7.9. It's like, it's not apples
that's
to
not
apples.
How it
apples
works.
To oranges. There's different things that you're reaching for and what you're doing.
No, it's the same as movie reviews where, you know, there might be some incredible drama, you know, Hotel Rwanda or whatever. I don't know why that's...
I never saw that one. I always wanted to.
But it's like if that movie...
It's the prequel to Iron Man, right?
If that movie gets... Yeah, it is. If that movie
totally.
gets...
Totally.
3.5 stars. You know, it made me cry. Loved it. 3.5 out of 4. Mm-hmm. And then you give Anchorman a 4 out of 4. Like, it doesn't mean that Anchorman's a better movie. It's about,
right,
did it achieve what it was trying to do?
Right, right, right.
Like, that movie's hilarious. I laughed out loud. Loved it. 4 out of 4. That, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. And you do your best to give, you know, numerical ratings to things that aren't math, like Dan Stapleton always says. And so that's why those – and I'm not saying that, like, you give some games a pass for trying to do whatever. I'm just saying, you know, use your – what I always tell people when they don't know what score to give a game is, I'm like, just go with your gut. I'm like, is this a good game? Is it a great game? Is it amazing? Is it a mediocre game? Yeah. And then if you're overthinking it, you're probably doing it wrong. Like, you know in your gut whether a game is good or great or where it is.
I mean, so what it always comes down to is that video game reviews are opinions. Yeah. And when people want to get all pissy about it and say they aren't and they're this and they're critical, they're, you know, yeah, critical evaluation of a product, that's true. But what you're talking about isn't what we do.
No, it's subjective.
Exactly. Like, by definition. I was to sit there and tell you if the game runs and this happens and this is how it falls through, that's a very boring review that you don't read. You know what I mean?
And so
this is my interpretation of what happened. And
like, I have real problems with GTA 5 that might – I actually don't know what my Game of the Year is going to be, but it might stop me from voting for it for Game of the Year. DC Universe Online. 4 years running.
Clearly, Game of the Year.
So that might stop me from voting for it, but that doesn't mean that it's not a masterpiece.
Right.
Sure, like, absolutely.
Those two thoughts can both exist independently.
Yeah, it's not mutually exclusive.
That boggles the internet's mind. Yeah. Right, that
people,
that, right?
People are like, what? It got the highest number, but it's not the Game of the Year?
Those people can call the cops.
They will. They will. All right. Let's see what else is in the Roper Report today. They get a little bit. Okay. You don't know. You came to the party for 200. Clearly, you've never listened to this show before. Cinemora is now free on PlayStation Plus.
I have nothing to say about that.
Everyone should get it.
Everyone
should get it. Cinemora is awesome.
Yeah, I loved it.
Like the genre is way underrepresented. Like, it's funny because how we have this surge of indie games, and really the surge of indie games means lots of puzzle games and lots of platformers.
That's
true. It should really, to me, like, it. The thing I most completely associate with the golden age and old age of arcade gaming is definitely like side-scrolling shmups.
Yep.
So I feel like it's totally underrepresented. I feel like the indie movement is so much about
indie gamers love Metroidvania.
Right, they love Metroid. Right, they love Metroidvania, and they love platforming games. But to me, like, a lot of the indie movement is about like bringing back the arcade vibe and finding new ways to explore old ideas has kind of what they've done a lot. And I feel like that's a totally underexplored genre is the shmup.
Cinemora is really, really good. It was easily worth the – I played it on Xbox and it was $10 or $15.
Yeah.
And I, you know, loved it. Oh, we just touched hands.
I actually just stabbed you with the pen and now we're touching hands.
Okay, caress. So yeah, definitely grab it. Great PS Plus perk.
A lot of PlayStation 4 stuff starting to hit stores. You got the DualShock 4. Mm-hmm. You got the PlayStation Eye. You got games now. First-party games are out.
I saw a video of a very handsome man unboxing a PS4 Eye camera.
I saw that last
night. Here's the thing I don't get about when I unbox something. I always tear the box. And people on the internet flip the fuck out. What are you saving your boxes for? I don't understand.
Aren't you just throwing that box in the
trash? Exactly. Why does it matter if I tore it?
But you don't understand.
The box is garbage.
but when it's a new system, though, every single thing attached to it is like a moment in history.
I remember those days of having to take pristine care of everything.
And that's the thing, too. Like, you have to remember is that for someone, like, we've all been doing this. We've all been, like, at least not professionally, but even as fans, we've been doing this for many, many generations of consoles. Right. For someone, like, remember back to like being a kid and getting an NES on day one.
Did you used to? So the N64 came in cardboard boxes,
right?
And for years, I saved them all.
Me too.
That's what I did with my N64.
Right. Me too.
I flattened them all out, and I had them in a box in my closet. Yep. And then one day, I'm like, "This is weird."
Yeah.
Right. I threw them all in the trash.
I had been a Sega kid for so long, and my cartridges always came in boxes,
right?
And then for Saturn, my discs or whatever. And so then when I bought an N64, I kept all the boxes and I would put the cartridges back in there. And finally, somebody came over to my house, like, "What? Did you just buy all these games? Why do you have like 17 games boxed up?"
But that's the thing. For someone, the PS4 is that system, man. For someone, the PS4 is going to be that thing they wake up to on Christmas morning, and they're like, "Oh my god, my first system! This is amazing."
A lot of people.
The inside scoop for any unboxing is that, you know, we're trying to make a video as fast as possible to show you the good stuff.
Right.
And so I probably wouldn't tear open a box normally that way.
Show you the good stuff of you figuring out how it hangs on the TV.
Yeah. People loved that. Shuhei tweeted about it. Come on now.
Getting that Caleb Lawson.
Just try to
get him in there.
Just try to imagine yourself.
Silly earring.
just try to imagine yourself opening up Legend of Zelda on the on Christmas morning and ripping that golden box.
Yeah, that's different. That's a cool box. This is a box the controller's in.
But it's different. It's only different to us because to us, like, you know, to us it was special and it was a new thing. And to a lot of people, this is going to be special and a new thing.
I have a lot of trouble
especially
with
to find out girls are boys and then nothing. None of this will be special to you.
I never know like what to keep or what to get rid of. Like I saved, like I said, I saved all those boxes for years for no reason, then just threw them in the trash.
Yeah,
and it's like I don't know. I have these weird OCD tendencies where like I don't want to get rid of anything.
Mm. Well, the PlayStation 4's DualShock 4 reportedly works with the Xbox 360. It also ditches analog buttons, so no more pressure sensitivity.
Do we know? Sorry if we knew this, but have we heard anything about PC yet?
It's supposedly supposed to, but we couldn't get it to work in the office. We had trouble. It works with some PS3 games as well, but we were having a lot of trouble with like Hotline Miami. You couldn't get back to the menus, and then we couldn't get it to work with Grand Theft Auto 5 at all.
That DualShock 4 is really hot.
It's such a sick controller.
It's so, but actually both the controllers are rock.
Yeah, they're
solid.
Both excellent.
And well, the thing with the Xbox controller is just that. Oh, it's the. I was playing Titanfall and I was like, I'm like 3 minutes into Titanfall. I'm like, wait a second. I looked down. I'm like, oh, I'm using the new Xbox controller. Like, I didn't even notice. It didn't even register.
I think it feels different. The Xbox One.
The main thing is like the Xbox One controller. You have to play Forza with it. Yeah. When you play Forza and you feel the very articulated and unique feeling like force feedback in the triggers, that's when you're like, okay. And I know I sound like such an idiot right now.
No, I don't think so. I mean,
it's like,
people
made
fun
of force feedback. It makes a difference. This is like, okay, I don't know if you guys remember this. Maybe you do. You guys remember going to like CompUSA back in the day and then having like a demo unit of some super high-end force feedback controller for PC and you being like, wow, this feels like I'm actually experiencing something through my hands.
Fuck no. Who went to CompUSA?
A lot of people back in the day, but sure. I mean, like, but then when Rumble came to consoles, it just felt like your thing was shaking and it wasn't interesting. This was the first time when I played Forza 5 on the Xbox One with that controller.
Yeah.
When I was feathering the accelerator and I wasn't shifting up and I could feel it. And when the ABS was about to kick in because I was laying into the brakes too hard during a turn, I could feel that like that very familiar bumping that you feel in a car when that engages. It's really a different level of immersion.
So many people gave Microsoft a hard time for saying that the Xbox One controller cost $100 million in R&D, but like the controller is so important.
It's so sick.
It's like a non-trivial detail that people
if you screw
often,
it up, that's it.
And that's the thing. Like, so I have a PS4 pre-ordered, and I own a PS3. I own all the current gen consoles, but I don't play my PS3 as often. The Xbox 360 is my if the game hits multiple platforms, I buy it on the 360 because I don't like the PS3 controller. I don't like the convex dual sticks.
Sure.
I don't like R2 and L2, and like it's a preference thing. Like if someone likes them, cool. I just personally don't think, from a design
standpoint, I think it's almost objectively statable as bad.
I don't know if I would say bad, but I just I think the 360.
The
I prefer
control,
the 360.
Shoulder buttons are stupid.
Right, I'm saying shoulder and the sticks, yeah.
I mean, what I'm getting at is I'm so happy. The DualShock 4 feels great.
Amazing.
And the Xbox One feels great. Like, both those controllers, I really feel like they... no one talks about the controllers, but it's so important because that's the one, like, direct connection you have to the game.
Okay, so because you said that what I was going to say before is, are you either of you, like, car people? Like, do you read car reviews?
I have an 89 Honda Civic.
Awesome. That
I
tells me
train.
That tells me everything I need to know. But if you ask any car person...
Four cylinders of power.
If you ask a car person who drives and you ask them, hey, what's the most important thing about a car? Is it the horsepower? Is it the handling? Is it the turning radius? Is it how it performs on the skid pad? They'll always answer to you the one most important. If you're going to upgrade one thing on your car to make it perform better, it's one thing. It's the tires. Mm. Because the tires are where the car interfaces with the road.
Where the rubber meets the road, and a controller.
That is what is the exact same thing in video games. It is where the player.
I was
going to
say
you
should get one of those really tiny racing wheels.
So,
like a Mario Kart steering wheel.
But you're totally right to say, like, hey, if they spent all this R&D on the controller, money well spent, because that's hands down the most important thing of a system is where the player meets the game.
I had a buddy in high school that had like a beater, a really old, terrible car, and he would trick it out in silly ways like that. Like he had bucket seats in it, and he would have a little tiny racing steering wheel. But my favorite was he spent like $80, which is a lot of money when you're in high school.
Yeah.
He spent $80 on like a ridiculous over-the-top hood ornament. It was a man in a chariot being pulled by like six horses.
Nice.
The hood ornament was like 8 inches tall and like a foot long, this gigantic hood ornament. He spent all this money on it, was so happy about it. instantly stolen.
Of course, yeah. That's how that happens.
Within like a week, it was gone.
But yeah,
Stone
controllers.
Steve Austin drives pickup trucks.
And ATVs.
Good point. And milk trucks. Or not, beer trucks for him. Angle did the milk trucks.
Milk trucks.
What else we got here? There's a report that COD Ghost runs in 1080p on PS4 and 720p on Xbox One.
I haven't heard anything about that, Greg Miller.
Fucking call the cops. Jesus,
I haven't heard a thing
cares?
About that. I don't know what you're talking
about. It's HD. Both got the P.
that's your expert analysis. Both got
I
that.
I am the least like, yo, snobby graphics
yo,
guy.
They both got that P, son.
Yo, son, you got that P?
I do want to say, we've talked about this. We ran a big news story. We talked about it a lot on Podcast Unlocked. So I'm not sure how much you want to get into it here.
I'm just running on the Roper Report.
The one thing that I want to mention about this is we're getting a lot of questions about why we're not talking about it more.
Okay, yeah, we should address this.
And I don't speak for you two, but for me personally, I think about games as experiences.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not counting the pixels, I'm not counting the frame rates. Like, if frame rate affects the experience, then I'm going to mention it. Otherwise, it's just not something that's on my radar. Like, that's not the kind of gamer I am. And if you're like, I can't play games less than 1080p, like, more power to you.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever you want. If you have the information, once we know, for sure.
Let me offer a counterpoint here. I don't consider myself by any means a graphics whore. But something that I do get very uppity – I don't want to say uppity about. I don't want to say I get
you're
uppity about
uppity
it.
You're awfully uppity for somebody who eats bugs all day. Simpsons squad.
That was an adorable sound, Justin Davis.
That's his beer drinking laugh.
No, but something I do get kind of prickly about is we forget. Like, we talk about, oh, gameplay is king. And it is king. I'm not saying it's not. But the term video game is two words. It's video and game. And it's the art of what we do is both.
Yeah,
and video is not insignificant. So,
I think the people that the reason that people really, really care is because it's a proxy for the Xbox One versus PS4 debate.
That's
like,
the
no
real
one knows. Like, we won't know for a while. Like, it takes a while for the power of these consoles to be unlocked and reveal itself. And so people are just like, I totally get it. I'm not saying people shouldn't be talking about this, shouldn't be curious about this. Like, I get it. They really, you know, $400, $500 is a lot of money to spend. If you have an Xbox One pre-ordered, you have a legitimate reason to be concerned right now about the power of that console. Like, I get it.
Here's what's interesting to me about it that I don't think a lot of people are talking about. And this is as a person who generally has come down, at least for the next generation so far, and the messaging and the way the hardware looks, I've generally come down on the Sony side. I've generally come down on the side of thinking that it looks like the superior value and the superior piece of hardware. Mm-hmm. But that could, you know, I'm open to that changing, and I certainly love a lot of games on the Xbox One. That said, wouldn't it be interesting? So the thing is that the Xbox One has an onboard. It upscales itself. So this is not going to be left to the TV. This is going to be somewhere it upscales on its own. Now, wouldn't it be interesting if they found that by doing games in 720p and then upscaling it in the hardware right on board, that they were able to get performance gains out of games? What if 3 years from
– run at a higher frame rate?
Right. What if
or
three,
whatever.
What if 3 years from now – right now everyone's like, this is terrible. What if 3 years from now it's like, you know what? By running at lower resolution and just letting the upscaler – a really good upscaler deal with it, they're able to keep a higher frame rate with more going on down the road, and that'll have a bigger impact on people's experience than maybe the extra. Because I do not agree.
We've commissioned a feature on this on IGN's features editor, as you may or may not know.
That's right.
And we've commissioned a feature on this exact topic, which is Call of Duty. It is incredibly important to Infinity Ward and Activision and everyone at Call of Duty that game run at 60 FPS.
Right.
They will do anything. They will sacrifice anything because that's important to the style and tenor of gameplay that they've designed, the pace of gameplay they've designed.
Absolutely.
Whereas Grand Theft Auto, you know, or even Uncharted is a better example. Like, that's a 30 FPS game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, different genres, different styles of games.
Even different games within the same genre.
Uh-huh. Some, you know, need to – they will sacrifice visual fidelity to double that frame rate or keep that frame rate high. And others go in the opposite direction. It just depends on, you know, on a fundamental level, like, what kind of game you're making.
Right. I could say personally for myself, like, Halo – I don't want Halo to be 60. I want them to turn up the whatever effects
the
they can.
So
they,
turn up the graphics.
I want them to go. I want them to go to the nines with that.
We gotta tighten up the graphics
and
on level
play
two
it, and play and play it at 30 frames per second. Because to me, I was talking to Ryan McCaffrey about this too earlier. Like, to me, Halo just the gameplay, like you said, it's built around the speed of it and the pacing of it and the way it's balanced is around 30 frames per second. And I wouldn't want to play it at 60 frames per second. It would not feel like the same game to me.
Gotcha. Also in the news for PlayStation 4, digital sharing finally got explained. You'll have one account on your PS4. Uh-huh. Anyone it'll be the master account kind of thing. Anyone using that console then can use the apps and games that are now assigned to that master account, the mm-hmm. one that rules all on that PlayStation 4.
It's perfect.
You get all the PlayStation Plus benefits too. Here's the exciting thing for people like me. There's no limit now on the number of PlayStation 4s you can download your games to, you have to be signed in to play.
How is that different than PS3?
Right now you can have two PS3s. They limited that number a while
back. First,
no, but
I mean, was it at five originally? They did limit it to two. That's
so
right.
So what if like my wife and I both have a PS3 account? What does that mean for games that I've bought that are
on an account so you're sharing an account?
Yeah.
For
no,
PS3?
If we have separate logins on our PS3. I'm just trying to figure out how this is an
evolution for you,
of PS3.
No, for you, that the way that's going to work is like anything that you've bought, she's going to be whoever's the primary account.
No,
who's the primary?
It.
It's you?
Yeah.
So she's going to be able to play everything you've bought.
I understand.
I'm talking about
PS3.
PS3 right now, look at it this way. Like right now, I download games at home and at work, and if I tried to have a separate system in the bedroom, I couldn't do that. Mm. I would have to deactivate one of my consoles, reactivate another console, download there. If one of your things dies, that's always the big problem. You have to go on through the Sony Entertainment Network, then deactivate all of them or one of them if you can. But
that they've described the PS4 seems like it's just like, yeah, this is the way it should work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've learned some lessons.
Yeah.
I was curious, actually, when I was reading about the PS4 and the way it's going to work, one thing they did say is that you're going to need to deactivate it.
Killed it.
We're out of beer.
We killed these beers. Like Stone Cold would have.
Yeah, we murdered this stuff.
God, I need some lunch after this.
I need some Victors in my life right now.
Oh, shit.
Yes. No, but so like if you need to deactivate – because I've never run into this situation with even the PS3, so maybe this is like, you know, even the same thing now. But since you need to have the primary account in order to access these things, what happens if your system with the primary account dies? How do you get the primary account?
If it shits the bed?
Yeah.
You have to go and deactivate it through online now.
Okay, so that is something you can do. There's a way online you can deactivate it.
The problem is that there's a deactivate all button, but you can only use it every 6 months. So if there's something bad happened to you in those 6 months, you'd be effed up.
Yeah, because I've never run into that situation, so I didn't know how that works.
I have run into it a few times.
Oh, shit. Okay.
On day one of the PlayStation 4, there will be a 300-megabyte patch. It will give you remote play and all the sharing stuff you want. But the bigger thing is what's not there, the suspend and resume feature, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, that is kind of
whack. That was a big deal.
The day one patch is wild. It includes...
Only 300 megabytes, not terrible.
It includes such trivial details as Blu-ray playback.
I know. I was just going to mention that. Like, I can't believe the system can't play Blu-rays...
Out of the box.
Out of the box. I mean, that's insane.
I mean, because there's still... I don't know the exact percentage or the exact stats, but like there's a non-insignificant number of current-gen consoles that have never been connected to the internet.
Right.
I think I wish I had the stats, but like
I want to say it's somewhere between 20% and 30%.
I agree. I think it's like, you know, a fourth or a fifth of like, you know, 360s and PS3s have never been connected to online. So it's like, what about these people that buy a PS4?
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
And there's still like
I
guess these aren't people that are buying next-gen consoles, but like if you were still on dial-up, for example.
I mean, still have the workaround, of course, where probably you can go get the latest firmware off of a website, put on USB, but still, that's such a hoop to jump through.
Do they still do the thing where like big first-party games will come with the first...
Yes,
come with the firmware on it? Yeah, that's smart.
That's always the best when you're on it.
Now we just touch hands. I've touched hands with everybody.
You're trying to play God of War, and it's like, oh, you know, the update. Rounding out the Roper Report, Sony has invited IGN and a number of other outlets to the PlayStation 4 review event and launch celebration taking place in New York City on November 11th and 12th at the Standard High Line in Manhattan.
I want to go.
I think I'm going. I think it's me and Scott Lowe, maybe.
See that PlayStation 4
nothing,
launch.
Nothing's, I like this song, by
I want to go. I want to go home.
Nope.
I wanna go
I'm
going to
go
home.
There and tell everybody you're dead. They'll never know the difference. We have had a long show here, so I'm going to run right through the official IGN list of upcoming PlayStation software on all three platforms by the IGN editors. Now sing a song. Like, that's the Roper Report jingle, but I appreciate the moxie.
Okay,
Battlefield 4 is out.
Greg Miller is my favorite person in the world. He's a handsome man, and I'll touch him in funny places.
All right, it's a little ass-kissy, but I liked it in the end. Okay. Battlefield 4, 8.0, WWE 2K14, 8.7.
Oh, wait, back up real quick. That 8.0 is for the current-gen version.
Right. Oh, good call.
Okay, 8.5 on PC, forthcoming still on next-gen.
Gotcha. WWE 2K14, you reviewed that, 8.7.
Yeah!
I like it. I'm having fun with it.
Me too.
Batman review, 7.8. We'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. That was one of our questions here tagged.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed 4 review, 8.5. Is that what's the difference? Did we put up a next gen current?
We put up PS4, not Xbox One,
yeah.
PC.
Okay. But the same score, PS4 to
yep.
PS3?
Yeah.
All right, great.
Yeah. And his explanation was the PS4 version is obviously better. It looks better, but it's about your expectations for that console. That's what Marty. Sure. I'm paraphrasing Marty here, so
sure.
You know, he speaks for himself.
And just,
on your,
and just
a beard
going.
On it.
And just, oh, hey, I'm Marty
there's
Sleva.
A beard. There's a beard weighing down his jaw, drawing out his words.
I have to add my beard scraping against the microphone to
I
make
like,
that sound realistic.
You don't like stuff, all right. Then that 2K stuff we talked about last week, the Power Pack and the other pack, they're out, they're a collection of games. Angry Birds Star Wars has come across, I'm sure, way
that old chestnut that everybody's excited
Castlevania
for.
Lords of Shadows, Mirror of Fate HD, Crazy Market, Dynasty Warrior 6 Empires, OMG HD Zombies, Pac-Man and the Ghostly Adventures Proteus.
So Pac-Man...
Proteus.
Colin Moriarty is reviewing Pac-Man for IGN.
Yep.
Why, Colin?
Ridiculous.
Why would you do this, Colin?
I heard the conversation. So Colin is my desk mate. He sits right by me.
Yeah.
And so that is all kinds of hilarity all day long, as Greg Miller knows. And he's like, oh, I haven't reviewed a game in a while. I think he said, Dan Stapleton, I want to review something. So he gives him Pac-Man.
And the Ghostly Adventures.
And so Pac-Man's sitting there. He's munching on ghosts. He's eating power pellets. And then he says... I don't understand what Pac-Man's motivation in this game is. He says the ghosts seem to be just mostly minding their own business.
Yeah.
And then Pac-Man shows
just runs up. He's a bully.
Pac-Man shows up and just fucks with them.
Isn't that modern video games, though? It's like, what was that person doing before you shot them?
What that really is
they're
is...
guards, usually.
Indiana Jones. The original Indiana Jones, if Indiana Jones does nothing... The movie, the Nazis never find the Ark of the Covenant. They're digging in the wrong spot.
They all die. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Nothing happens.
That's how it always is. There's always that trick of like, ah, thanks for doing all the work for us.
Or even if they eventually do find it, then they take it and open it and it kills everybody.
Right, that's
and
what I'm saying.
Like, well, all right.
Everyone turns to Tang at the end of, you know, like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Indiana Jones does nothing in the first movie.
Has anybody played Batman Arkham Origins here other than me?
I haven't played it,
okay.
No.
I'm playing it now.
Let's bust through this question real quick from Christopher. He says Beyond.
Beyond.
There you go. That's how this works. Batman Origins is soulless. They took the assets and gameplay mechanics and just copied and pasted them into Batman by Numbers story. The combat gadgets in Batman are all the same with no meaningful updates. Now we're only going to read the all caps parts of the letter because they're spoiler free. Instead of being a dynamic story, it is a cheesy video game story. Quote, oh no, there are 8 bosses out to get you. What will you do? What are your thoughts of the game and how it stacks up to the predecessors? Thanks for all the help with my hypothetical abortions.
There's a part of me that feels like that was just a troll question sent in by Jim Sterling.
What are hypothetical abortions?
Oh, we're not only are we the number one PlayStation podcast, we are the number one hypothetical abortion podcast. Because we did a show once we had to talk about how Clements's friend wasn't going to be born.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's how that was. We had a whole bunch of hypothetical abortions
for
his mom.
I am not wild about Batman Arkham Origins.
What don't you like about it? We'll be spoiler-free since this is new.
Okay.
How deep are you right now?
Not very deep.
Okay.
Here's the deal. Like, I played for 2 or 3 hours on Friday night, and I had it all weekend. I'm like, I'm going to play this game this weekend. And then I just didn't. I just played Hearthstone instead. Like, I wasn't motivated to play anymore. I beat the... I don't even know. The guy that's like Batman, but an assassin.
Deathstroke. I love that fight.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't know. It's kind of a big QTE.
So what? I mean, that's how it should be. Here's what I... When I was playing
it should be?
When I was playing it, I'm like, fucking finally, somebody is making a boss fight where the boss makes sense for... They're finally making a Deathstroke fight feel like Deathstroke should feel.
I agree with that.
I fought Deathstroke in DC Universe Online. And he just runs around and shoots you. And I'm like, this isn't Deathstroke.
What I like about the boss fights is they feel like brawls. Like, you are brawling with these dudes. Like, it's back and forth. They're winning. You're winning.
Yeah.
Like, boss fights in games are tough, man. Like, they're often really cheesy or gimmicky. And Batman, Arkham Origins boss fights is probably the strongest part of the game.
100%. Yeah. I love Copperhead later on, too.
The game... Yeah, I don't know. Normally, I think IGN's reviews are shit. No, I'm just joking.
You totally had me.
You
like,
heard it
wow.
here first, folks.
Bold.
No. But what I 100% agree with our review, where it's the same as Walking Dead, where it's like damning it with faint praise. We're like, man, like our review says, you know, Batman, these Arkham games are sort of like pizza, is even when they're not very good, they're still pretty good.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about Arkham Origins, where like the combat system is so fluid and so fun, and zipping around the city feels great, and the city's all like moody. But I agree with our review where it's like there's just nothing there. Like it feels soulless. Like it's I'm very curious about how I would feel if it wasn't done by, if I knew I wasn't done by Rocksteady.
See, this is what I keep talking about in The Office. I feel like all the, like, you know, you brought up Jim Sterling for 3.5 from Destructo and stuff. I feel like if you would have blind tasted this game and given it to him and they didn't know it was somebody else doing it, if there was a possible way to give it to reviewers and not say Rocksteady's not doing it, the reaction would have been 100% different.
I don't know. Like, you go back into like the steelworks, the steel mill.
Right, because they're trying to establish like a lineage for why it was cool when you were there before. And, like, here's my thing with going back into those old places is that with the steelworks, I walked in and I'm like, oh, I remember this place. But I'm there for a fraction of a second and I'm gone. Yeah. It's not like you're in these places like, motherfucker, again with Arkham Asylum. Like, it's like in that,
like, I'm not.
And this story is great. There's a point in this where I was like, this game's fun. I'm having a great time. And the story does, like, as a DC nerd, like, does this 180. And I'm like, oh, shit, this is awesome.
I do.
The marketing lied to us. This isn't what I thought it was. This is dynamite.
I do think, I don't remember the exact score we gave it, but a 7.8.
Yeah.
That's a little bit higher than I would be, but I'm still in the good. Like, I would give it a 7 something.
Yeah.
Like, right now. Again, I'm not that far in.
So you hate the game, Justin, is what you're saying.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you give something a 7 flat, you're like, yeah, it's good. Then people are like, oh. So I'm like, come on, it's a good game. Yeah, like,
I don't want to shout out – I'm not going to shout out a particular user, but I had a Twitter conversation with someone who was like, hey, when's your, you know, when's your WWE 2K14 review coming out? And I was like, oh, you know, this is when it's going to be up. And it's like, yeah, well, I hope it gets a really good review, you know. And I was like, hey, I think you'll be – I can't give away my review, but I think you'll be happy. He's like, well, I hope you're giving it in the high nines then.
Whoa.
And I was like, in my head, I already knew I was giving it an 8.7. And I was like, that's what it would have to score for me to be able to say that you'll be happy with the score.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, you know, my review came out, and sure as anything, like, the guy tweeted back at me, hey, I thought you said you gave it a good score. And I was just like,
I will
murder
you.
Great score.
I was like, I gave it an 8.7.
Right. We get into a situation where, you know, and then people do screenshots of, like, silly stuff. Like, Call of Duty got a 9, the last Call of Duty got a 9.5 on Destructoid, and then they give Batman a 3.5 for being the same stuff.
Yeah.
And it's the same deal we talked about before, where for some games, it's important for them to be 60 FPS, others need to be 30 FPS. Like, in the same way, like, an action adventure game needs to bring something new to the table every single time, where a Call of Duty game or a game like that is sort of like a sport. Like, if you were to play tennis, for example, like, it's different playing on clay than it is playing on grass.
Sure.
But it's still the same sport,
right?
And that's sort of the position that, like, a game like League of Legends or StarCraft or Call of Duty is in, where, like, they can do all kinds of cool stuff with the campaign and, you know, cooperative modes like zombies. Is the new one in Call of Duty Ghosts a secret still?
I think so. Okay. They showed a trailer that was kind of teasing is, but I don't think
so. They can do stuff like that, but they can't do. There's only so much they can do to mix up the multiplayer.
Sure.
But, you know, as a counterpoint to that, though, what I will say is that, and this is
Vince and his counterpoints.
I know, I'm a fucking countermaster here. No, but
triangle button above his head.
No, and this is not at all to, like, countermand what Dan had to say. But in general, I think on its own, if you don't qualify it, saying that something is more of the same is bad, is a bad criticism.
Sure.
On its own. Like, I think that every video game is repetitive. Every sequel is more of the same to different degrees.
Arkham City is very different than Arkham Origins. Like, it's bold.
Well, I mean, the environment.
But the core gameplay loop is the same thing.
It's more like an open world GTA, whereas Arkham Origins is more like a 3D Metroid.
It's a different context for the same kind of gameplay.
I don't know that I agree. I feel like they feel very different. But even besides that, like, I don't want to get into the weeds with that, but one thing I want to make sure I mention, and I don't know if IGN's review mentioned it, but, like, even besides feeling the same and all of that, like, the game is not as polished. Just, like,
and that's
little tiny details that add up over time. Stuff like, I'm getting hung up on, like, geometry. Like, Batman's getting stuck.
Sure.
He can't grapple different places. The grapple, like, he's grappling on, like, this fire escape, and then he's kind of stuck there. And, like,
I had one of those last night where I grappled through a sign to get a sniper, but, like, the sign's hanging off the wall, so there's, like, a little gap there. So, like, and then I fell between them, and I was like,
and there's just, like, little that final level of polish that can take a game from, you know, an 8 to a 7 or a 9 to an 8 is just – it's not there in Arkham Origins. And that doesn't make it a bad game.
No.
It just prevents it from being, you know, a better game.
And that's kind of what I'm saying, is that if – you know, in a world where Origins nails all the same notes that Arkham City
– Origins nails all the notes.
One man. One reviewer. No, but in a world where Arkham Origins nails all the same high notes that Arkham City and Arkham Asylum did – I don't think that we start criticizing it for being more of the same. I think we start going, hey, it's more of that great stuff that we liked before. But since it has technical problems, and because of the fact that in terms of, you know, just the kind of granular how it feels moment to moment, even the combat feels different. Like, I know that it's harder, the counter window.
It seems like they're not playing by the same rules.
Yeah, but exactly. More aggressive and faster, and you have smaller
windows. And the counter window is like half of what it was before.
Exactly, and that throws everything off, because I'm hitting the counter button, and I haven't heard if there's a statement from WB Montreal saying, like, we changed that because you're a younger Batman and you don't know, but really what it does is just piss me off most of the time. I'm like, come on.
And I do believe in, like, they made a totally good game. Like, I'm playing it. I'm going to continue playing it. Isn't WB Montreal a new studio?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like that gives me a lot of hope for whatever they're doing next. Like, there's obviously talented folks there. Uh-huh. You know, I hope they're turned loose to, you know, sort of do something, something original. Yeah.
All right. I like it a lot. I agree with all the complaints that have been lobbed, though. So, I mean, like, that's the whole thing. Like, you're talking about you'd be a little bit lower. I'd probably be a little bit higher, but I'm talking, like, decimal points.
Yeah, for sure. I'd be low sevens.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Podcast Beyond episode 316. Mm-hmm. Or Podcast Beyond 316, as we like to call it on here. We only had one reader question. Sorry, I had a whole bunch printed off. We just had such a good discussion. That's why you tune in.
Sorry, it's my fault.
No, that's fine. You can check out Podcast Beyond every Tuesday. We post it here on IGN.com and your favorite podcast service of choice. Remember, though, the podcast is fun and all, but what keeps the mics on is IGN.com proper. So come there, read the reviews, watch the videos, sign up for Prime if you hate ads, because it'll let you get around it. Until then, make sure you keep up with us through Twitter. IGN is IGN. I'm Game Over Greggy. Error Justin.
Huh? E-R-R-O-R Justin.
Error Justin is Justin Davis over here. And then Vince Ingenito. Vince Ingenito?
I know. I am Vincognito.
Jesus Christ,
but not
man.
Spelled like my last name. It's
Jesus
N-E-A-T-O.
Christ, man.
Vincognito.
That's – you got to fix that if you want to be a big star.
No, it's incognito with a V in front.
Exactly.
That's what you should say.
Oh, that's way easier.
Right. But it's not spelled like regular incognito.
Oh,
it's
Jesus
Christ. It's N-E-A-T-O. It's a play. See what I did there?
You need to be Vince IGN. You need to fix that.
Yeah, then I'm going to run into a GCM storm problem, though, if you know what I'm talking about.
I hear you, bro.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. So,
ladies and gentlemen, every Podcast Beyond ends with a song. Today's song comes from WWE Anthology. You can buy it over on that there iTunes or wherever. This is the Oh Hell Yeah song. I'm putting it here because obviously this is the Steve Austin podcast here, Podcast Beyond 316. And this song is admittedly terrible. But it'll. I want you to, when you listen to it, flashback to Greg Miller driving around with his CD player into the tape deck of his Ford Taurus with his friends talking about ECW. Listen to this terrible jam. Beyond.
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 Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. People think they know him. Yeah. Say he's wound a little tight. They say he goes looking for trouble. That he's always ready for a fight. But I think he's just an easygoing guy. Not crossing any lines. He's a caring individual. Most of the time. Most of the time. Quite a lot of the time.
More like when you tune in for an episode. Now, this isn't me, of course. This is just other people. But when you turn in for an episode of Batman and Robin, and then it's a Batgirl episode, you're like, what the fuck?
Who'd gonna love it?
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.